Hello.
Hello.
Michael, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm not too bad. How are you?
Good. Can you hear me and see me okay?
You can, yeah. Yeah.
Perfect. That's great. Michael, look, I really appreciate you taking the time. Sorry about yesterday. There must have been a mix-up with time zones and schedules and all the rest. But I appreciate you taking the time out today to sit down and have a chat with me.
Yeah, no problem. Not a problem.
Michael, I know you... So what part of the world are you in? Talking about time zones.
I'm in Canada, in the Pacific Northwest of Canada.
Oh, Canada. Oh, very good. And what's happening in Canada at the moment? Anything exciting?
Oh, nothing too exciting, no. Kind of same old. Same things everyone else is going through.
Yeah, it's a bit of a political turmoil up there, isn't it? And like that, Ireland's no better, I don't think.
Yeah, we've definitely got our issues with our government and stuff like that. But I think we have an election coming up in this year or next year, so hopefully we can do something about it.
Yeah, please God, says you, yeah. Look, Michael, I tell you how I stumbled across your page, really, was from Instagram, and I'd seen this No Grid Survival Projects pop up a lot, and props to your PR guy, because I seen it a good bit, and I seen it gain so much traction, and it's very interesting, and I thought it was it's interesting time for something like that to launch, and I think a lot of people jumped onto it because of the recent few years we've been having. But first, I'd like to hear a bit about your own background, kind of your upbringing, if you're always Canadian, and what brought you down eventually to this path.
Well, I was always, like, I've grown up in British Columbia, Canada, born and raised, and I was always, like, a self-reliant person. Like, as a kid, there was, like, a green space in a creek by my house. I spent most of my time in there building shelters, making fires, just practicing primitive survival skills, stuff like that, going fishing and things like that. But when I got old enough, I joined the military and I deployed overseas as a NATO peacekeeper to the former Yugoslavia. And when I came back, I kind of saw what was like what the result of like a regional conflict would be like, and how like you could basically get knocked down to the Stone Age pretty quickly. So at that time, I kind of decided that, yeah, I need to be like even more self-reliant, have more skills. So I became a welder fabricator, got a lot of hands-on building fabrication skills from that. And I always had a passion for writing, so I started writing as well. And that's how people who I wrote this book for found me, was I was writing DIY articles about self-reliance stuff for them. And they asked if I wanted to do a book with them. And I said, yeah, sure, absolutely. And then No Grid Survival Project was born.
When did you write that book?
Oh, it's a couple of years ago now. I believe it was, I want to say 2021. I think we started writing. It took a year to write, getting all the projects together. And there's a few other authors as well in the book. So getting everything together took quite a while. I feel like it was a solid year before it actually got published. But it's been out for a few years now.
Yeah, because I noticed your Facebook page is only, I think, January 22. And yet it has such a following to it. It's amazing how quick it picked up on, you know. Again, maybe the sign of the times. Why do you think your ancestry, your family, your father, your grandfather, were they all army veterans as well? Like, where does the self-reliance come at such a young age?
I'm not sure where it comes from a young age. Both my grandfathers were in the military. My dad was a tradesperson as well. And I just always kind of wanted to do things myself. I'm an independent person. I don't really like asking for help and stuff. And I also am pretty cheap, so I don't like spending a lot of money and stuff. I like to do as much as I can by myself. Like, if I can build it, I will, type things. So I've always had that mindset and that attitude. So it just was a natural thing that kind of developed with me. But like, the state of the world definitely guides me more towards a self-reliant aspect.
Yeah, I'd say... You know, what I feel probably makes your website and your book so popular now is, I'm sure, look, you had all these tools, and the fact that your father being a tradesman and your grandfather and great-grandfather being in the military all obviously bled into you. You obviously had these projects, had knowledge of these projects, and were able to do these projects before 2021. But did you see the dangers of the last few years, let's say? Well, we're talking 2021, so COVID would have been the main thing that was all over the news, and the kind of fear-mongering of it and all that. And people were worried, I know. And to be honest, I think as well, there was this worry among people that, you know, are some of society going to be pushed out a bit to the Netherlands, where, you know, when these passports start coming into play, and people, some people said, yeah, I'm all for it. And some people said, oh, hold on a second, I'm not too sure. Is this taking away a bit of my freedom? I'd rather become a bit more self-sufficient. I know that conversation has happened among my friends and my peers in the last couple of years about getting your own herbs in and digging your own drill. But I guess, like, you obviously saw an opportunity where this could help a lot of people out in 2021 and said, you know, have you heard many people come back to you with feedback that, you know, this is great, it's working well? Any stories like that from after releasing the book?
No big stories.
I have had a few
emails from people asking follow-up questions, and then they're looking to build like the solar power system and stuff like that. I think someone emailed me about putting together a rainwater harvesting system and just asked a few follow-up questions about that and stuff. That everyone I've talked to about the book has been pretty positive. And I have had a few comments where people said it is, like, even for someone with no skills, it's easy to, like, everything's broken down to a level that you could figure it out. And it doesn't take a lot of, like, hands-on, like, you don't need to have, like, a trade to build any of this stuff. We've laid it out easy enough that most people can pick up the book, go to Home Depot, buy the stuff, and put it together with very little effort, very little fuss.
Yeah, and what can you give us some of the examples of what's in the book? So you mentioned there your rainwater treatment system.
Yeah, we cover so much. There's like 70 projects in the book. There are so much stuff in it. The main ones are the water. We cover how to make water, like how to get store your water properly, how to use like 55-gallon drums to store your water, how to use smaller containers, like tips and that. We have the rainwater harvesting system, which is like 3 55-gallon drums stacked on top of each other, which provides also pressure with the gravity's pulling down. It actually provides a bit of water pressure with that. We have some filtering methods in there. We have a hot water heater that you can attach to a wood stove. We have ways to reclaim water. We have like a toilet top tank, like a hand washing station that we describe in the book. And the big project in the book, which was a big source for us, was the solar power system, how to get the solar panels, the batteries, how to hook it all up, how to basically install it in such a way that you can power a fridge and a laptop and charge your devices. And as long as you have sunlight, you can do it pretty much indefinitely. So it gives you a lot of power, self-reliance. And that was a big project in the book. That took a long time to do. But aside from that, we have like how to grow your own food, how to secure your property with traps and stuff. Mm. We have we talked about how to make gardens and what kind of things you should be putting in those gardens. There's a few recipes there for like survival foods. But most of it is geared towards like how do you grow your own food, like the real self-reliance stuff. But yeah, we cover how to make a greenhouse. There's how to do indoor greenhouse, outdoor greenhouse. Like, our goal was to have as many projects as possible that you could take the book and you could almost 100% make yourself self-reliant. And if you follow all the projects in the book, you can pretty much get there. Obviously, it's hard to be 100% self-reliant, but with the book, you'd be really, really close to getting it.
Yeah, I heard a statistic last year that if the power went in America, it was something like 60% of people would be gone within the first few months or something, you know, that they just wouldn't have a clue. It's a little bit sad, I suppose, because that's definitely a sign of the times as well. And it's not when I say that, everyone says that as if it's a bad reflection on the current generation, but the current generation is only living in the world that their technology has progressed to, you know, like this. If people are driving the car, they're not going to go out running to work, you know, when shoes aren't, you know, like they're not going to be out pumping water if the taps are flowing with the, you know, hot water pumps. But it has made us vulnerable to any disasters that might come our way. Because I think we're only talking about a couple of decades since people would have a much better chance of survival. You know, as the years go on, we get less and less self-sufficient. And food is in abundance, and rubbish food is in abundance, obviously, as well. But yeah, like I've seen a lot of your videos and, you know, the risks of, well, you know, we have a lot of catastrophes with the weather lately, and we have the pandemics, and we have a lot of extreme things happen where the news isn't shocking people anymore. Like, how likely do you see, obviously you released this book in 2021 recently enough, how likely do you think it is that some unforeseen event might push us to where we might have to go off grid, even if it's for a short period of time, you know, solar flares or even EMP strike?
Well, I think, unfortunately, the actual possibility of grid down scenarios is like highly probable. The chance of a coronal mass ejection is, if you expand the timeline long enough, is 100%. We've been hit before. We were hit in 1859 with the Carrington event. And that at that time, we had very minimal electricity. So it was the only reason we really know what happened was the telegraph system. A lot of the telegraph system acted like an antenna, which is what our power grid would act like. So when the coronal mass ejection hit the Earth, it energized telegraph system, and people were able to like send telegraphs without any actual power because it was self-powering. Several telegraph stations caught fire. Lots of people were hurt. But because we had no widespread power grid, for the average person, there was really no evidence anything had actually happened. And if that were to happen today, it would just wipe out our power grid. Power grid would be gone. And that is something that will eventually happen. Coronal mass ejections are regular occurrences. They get shot out from the sun on a very regular basis. It's basically like a game of Russian roulette. Eventually, one of them's going to hit us. Like, the sun's going to send one out in a direction, and it's going to interact with us, and it's just a matter of time. But it could happen 100 years from now. It could happen 1,000 years from now. It could happen next year. It could happen in the next 5 minutes. We can't predict it. We don't know. We could get a little bit of forewarning, but we can't really predict when and where these things are going to happen. For an EMP strike, I see that as being a less of a possibility, only because EMPs are limited to countries that have them. So you have to have a nuclear capability in order to launch an EMP strike. I could see something like that happening if, say, for example, China wanted to invade Taiwan and they wanted to take the United States out of the picture for a little while. I could see them using, say, North Korea to launch an EMP attack as like a proxy, knowing that the retaliation would be on North Korea. I could see that happening, but like for a superpower to just launch an EMP strike, I don't see that as being likely. And for terrorists to get a hold of one, it's not impossible, but it's also unlikely as well. The big risk I see of the power grid is twofold. One is cyber terrorism. It's a massive risk of the power grid. A lot of these systems are not exactly the most advanced. Some of them are easily hackable. And even not even with cyber terrorism, with just regular terrorism, if you shoot transformers in the right way with just a small caliber rifle, and you hit the right transformer in the right spot in the grid, if you have that kind of knowledge, you can wipe out power to large areas. And it's all it takes is the knowledge of when and where to hit and how to hit it. If you shoot a transformer, you drain all the coolant out of it, the thing just melts down. It's a very, very simple thing to do. There have been many cases in the States where that has happened, where people have started taking shots at transformers. And it's not really very well publicized or talked about, which I think probably for a good reason, to not give anyone any ideas. But another thing that could happen to the power grid beyond that is it's just taxed. It's old. Everyone's getting an electric car now. All that power is going to come from somewhere. It's very expensive to upkeep. No one wants nuclear power plants. Like, it's hard to maintain, and overloading the power grid, like we saw that in Texas, just the ice took out the power grid. Like, it so easily happens. And I think it's going to happen so much more in the near future, because it's just taking us so long to get ahead of the curve on that.
Yeah, you know, here in Ireland, and it's probably worldwide, because a lot of these things, these policies seem to be rolling out worldwide at the same time, but there's incentives for buying electric cars and getting diesel and petrol cars off the road by 2030, which isn't that far away. And I see a lot of people stand up and saying, hold on a second, our power grid can't support everybody switching over to electric vehicles. And I've only seen this week, actually, that electric vehicles can be more harmful for the environment, even from the production standpoint. There seems to be without getting too down dirty straight away, there's a worry that our lines will all go on everything electric. And like, I have a stove sitting beside the laptop now, and they're targeting the stoves in the regular person's house now as well. They want everything air to water. They want everyone electric cars, you know, and it's leading into the whole digital currency and everything being online. And there's a lot of people, you know, even in my peer group, who are kind of saying, well, hold on a second. It's not that we're old fashioned, but we're just seeing the few red flags here. And I think that's the type of people who might actually be, I'm only guessing, but the people who are tuning into your projects that are kind of saying, well, I don't want an air to water house, and I want to keep my stove, and I want to be self-sufficient, and I want to have my chickens and grow my farm, my herbs and my vegetables. But do you see an agenda against that yourself politically?
Well, there's definitely an agenda to get rid of fossil fuels. And the push to electric cars is happening here in Canada as well. I think they've said 2035, they don't want to have any more gas cars sold in Canada. And I believe in some places in the States too, I think California is one of them, it has a similar push to that. And we've had the same things where they want to try to break reliance on like natural gas. Like, I have a natural gas stove in our house, which I love. It's just the best for cooking. But in the name of climate change, they're trying to push for it all to go electric. And I don't know if it's just a political move to just try to look like you're more, they're trying to be like pro climate, or if it's an actual push to get everything on one grid so that it could be taken away at any time. I'm not sure what that would be. Like, I can't really comment on the motivations, but I do see it happening all over the place. And there is definitely a move to get us more dependent on the electrical grid and try to get everything on there. And then even like communications grids and stuff like that as well. Like, there's a definite push to keep us as dependent on a few different basic grids so that we can't go outside of them.
Yeah, and I think you can see this in, now look, stop me if you don't want to go down certain routes of conversation, but you can see in the likes of China, where if you step outside what their barriers are there, let's say, you know, whatever they have in place, you know, they have the 15-minute cities over there, and they have the social credit system, and they have all these type of things. And I know Ireland, we have our prime minister who sits with the WEF in Davos every year, and it seems like, you know, Dublin now is the capital of Ireland. That's becoming a 15-minute city, and they sell it as though there's more green areas and transport will be better. But really, it seems like it's just of taking the control of everyone's move, of their private usage and everything. And for them to have, you know, and for us to have to comply with whatever mandates are put in place. And there's a lot of bills coming, being pushed through Ireland at the moment, and hate speech bills that got, I think, a lot of worldwide coverage on the news. Obviously, the electric car thing, the 15-minute cities, it seems a lot. You know, even taking private property rights. And I think this is why, and the only reason I'm bringing this up as well is because this is why I think, this is what brought me to want to talk to you. You know, this is what caught my eye with the self-sufficiency thing. You know, I think if people had a business where they went around to people's gardens and said, you know, I can do these projects that, say, you've laid out in the book, and I can dig your drills for you, and all you have to do is maintain it, I think they'd make massive money now, because I think there's so many people who are looking for that at the moment, who don't know where to start, and they're confused about it. You know, obviously, to someone like yourself that's trying to be self-sufficient as a kid all the way growing up, it's probably coming a bit more natural to you that when you see pandemics or crises, you can say, well, look, here's a book for those who want it. You know, and if we're going electric and we're so reliant on electric in modern times, if things go down, it's there. It's a handbook, you know. I guess I lost my question in that, but what do you think of what I've said there as a, you know, as a Eastern policy push to the West, and I suppose where your book can come in as a good utility there?
Well, I definitely see it as, like, even amongst people I talk to, as there's like this kind of silent rebellion against some of the stuff you're talking about, like the 15-minute cities and the electric cars. And I think people do see, like, a book like No Great Survival Projects and, like, getting your own chickens or getting a garden in your backyard or even on, like, the patio of your apartment building, right? And doing stuff like that, they see that as a sign of almost rebellion against the people who want to kind of control them. And then even just having simple things like getting a little solar power system so that when the grid does go down, like, you can keep your fridge going and you can charge your phones and stuff like that. Like, it's those things I do see people as, like I say, as a silent little bit of rebellion against the system, because we all kind of feel it, where whether it's planned or not, where we're becoming, and you said it before, we're becoming more and more dependent every generation. It's like, you can see it, like, I grew up in the 80s, like, the life back then was so much different than it is now. And I can't, like, I look at my kids and how they're growing up, and it's like the world is so different. And but it's also like, it's like with all of this, our self-reliance going down and our reliance on technology kind of going up, that technology does bring a lot of good stuff with it. Like, it, I mean, we can say, like, the internet and social media and all that is bad, but it's also promoting No Great Survival Projects and it's showing people that they can actually do these things and build these projects, and they can do it themselves, which is why we have the physical book too, because it's all well and good for me to make a bunch of videos and put them out there, but when the grid goes down, you have no access to the internet anymore. So now, if you have the book, you can open it up, and everything's so simple. You could actually, most of those projects, if the grid was down for a significant time, you could probably pick up the book and scavenge most of what you need. Like, I'm pretty confident that in a grid down scenario, you could acquire almost everything you need from that book just by scavenging. Like, you could find it around your, within, like, I don't know, say 10, 20 mile radius to wherever you're living. You could probably get everything you needed, you know, wheel a deal it or just outright steal it. Like, you could find all the stuff. So that's where the book is. That's why we're insistent on having a hard copy of the book that you can put on your bookshelf. And even if you don't make the projects now and you wait and the grid goes down, you can still pull that book out, start rifling through it, and you could probably make a lot of stuff work.
I mean, dig into your brain a little bit on, you know, I think it'd be interesting, kind of the first steps you would, how you would react if something like that was to happen tomorrow morning. You know, where would you go? I know a lot of people will go, you know, we have a tendency for fight and flight and panic would set in. But, you know, if there's five or six steps you could remember, what would you think would come to mind first?
Well, if we're talking about the grid going down, the problem with, like, the grid going down is it kind of depends on the scenario, right? So let's just say it was a wide scale, like, coronal mass ejection, or worst case scenario, right? When there's a coronal mass ejection, the grid goes down. None of us are going to know what the extent of the disaster is right away. It's like, all we're going to know on something like that, because the coronal mass ejection is not going to affect your cell phone. It'll affect power grids basically only. Like, your complex electronics should be fine in a coronal mass ejection. So as far as anyone's going to be concerned, power's gone. Power just went out, and power goes out all the time. It just happens. So there's not going to be a lot of panic right away. And that is where your survival mindset has to be, like, kind of like, whenever the power goes out, the first thing I think is, ooh, is this widespread or is this local? And I check. If I can go on the internet from my cell phone, I know automatically right there, okay, this is a local event. This is not a coronal mass ejection. The internet's fine. And then I can breathe a sigh of relief. If that didn't work, if I went on my phone and I couldn't access the internet, I'd be like, okay, now I need to find out, number one, how widespread is this thing? And that's where amateur radio comes into play. I've got, like, amateur radio set aside and they're in Faraday cages. I can pull them out. I can run an antenna up a tree and I can start scanning through the shortwave frequencies, and I should be able to find out very quickly either by the total lack of traffic and total lack of communications going out, or by people talking about what's happening in their area, how widespread this disaster is. And if it's like a nationwide or planet-wide event, my immediate thought is going to be hunker down. I have I can't remember what they call it. It's a water bladder that goes in your bathtub and you hook it up to your water spout. First thing I would do, turn that thing on, fill that thing up. It's about, I think, 100 gallons worth of water, because that now increases my water stockpile, because water is going to be huge after a grid down event like that, because now all the water pumps aren't working. While that's filling up, I'm securing my house, making sure that everything's like all my door or all my security measures are in place. Everything's good, that my house is secure, even though I know that there's going to be a very long lag between when people realize the power's out to the point where it realizes it's a real emergency. There's going to be a long time where people are just kind of wandering around. Oh, it's a regular power outage. That's the period of time where I'm acting. So once I've secured everything, I've got as much water out of the tap as I possibly can, I'm going out, I'm going shopping. I've got cash. It's not much. I got a couple $100 in cash just for emergencies like this. I'm going shopping. I'm getting staples, flour, rice. Don't usually need toilet paper. My wife keeps us really stocked up on that. But any staple items we need, non-perishables, I'm buying as much as I physically can, using as much cash as I can. I'm buying all that. I'm bringing it home. And I'm not running away, because it's, unless you have somewhere to go, bugging out, there's no point. You're just going to be now surviving on the road with limited resources, where you should be staying home where all your resources is. And you should also be, as soon as people realize what's going on, you should be liaising with your neighbors, getting together, trying to like form a bit of a group in the community saying, hey, we're going to be in this for a while. This is the information I have. I've got this book, No Great Survival Projects. I've built a few things here and there, but and just basically try to get them all on board. And because you're not going to be able to do it by yourself, you have to have people around you, and especially for security, because after a day, 2 days, then people are going to start getting desperate. And once they realize how widespread the disaster is, and once that word starts getting out, then you're going to start seeing people looking to loot and to steal from other people. The criminal element will come up, police, or hospitals, EMS, fire departments, they're all going to collapse, because as soon as their paychecks are guaranteed to not come, they're just not going to go to work. They have families to worry about. So all of that's going to collapse. The local governments will collapse, and by extension, the federal governments are going to collapse, because without the power they had over us before, there's no enforcement of everything. And it's all going to come down to making sure you got enough water, making sure that your neighbors are on board, that you've kind of formed a bit of a group around you, and to make sure that you're taking care of people around you, they're taking care of you, without disclosing too much about what you have. Like, if you have a year's worth of water stored away, you don't want to tell people that. If you have a lot of food stored away, you don't want to tell people that. You want to kind of keep a lot of stuff close to your chest, but make sure that you're letting people know that you can be someone that you can, help them out and help out people get together, because at the end of the day, it's going to have to be small communities of people that are going to have the band together. You're going to have to start like thinking about growing food. Like, all this stuff's going to have to happen right away. Like, you have to start thinking about how you're going to gather meat. You have to think about what you're going to plant, who's got a garden, how many people know about gardening. Start getting that going, because at a coronal mass ejection, it could be like years before you ever see power come back on again. So it's all going to be come down to forming a survival community around you.
Now tell me, does optimal self-sufficiency include the ability to hunt, even the ability to acquire some self-defense skills in the event of that? Would you include them in being prepared? I know you're going through the doomsday scenario, which is unlikely to be that catastrophic, but say there's solar flares and you're down for a month, maybe that's long enough that people will come, that break-ins will go up straight away, shortly afterwards. Like, I know the utility of hunting is dying out massively. Would you consider that a good utility to keep?
I would say hunting is, if you can do it, I think it's great. I think hunting and fishing are two things that you should, like, if you can't hunt, like, some people just can't hunt. Some people are just not, they're not hunters, right? But you should probably know how to fish. And then with that, you need to know how to properly clean and cook a fish, right? Now, I'm a hunter. I'm a very bad hunter. Have yet to actually harvest a deer, but my boys and I go out hunting and we've harvested a bunch of grouse and stuff. And until you actually, like, take the animal and, like, break it apart and cook it, you don't really know how to do that. And even if you're someone who doesn't ever really want to hunt, if you know someone who does hunt, it's always a good idea to just go with them. Say, hey, can I come with you? 99% of hunters would be like, yeah, absolutely. They'd love to get someone into the sport. And it's an important thing to kind of understand how, like, if you ever had to gather your own food, you're like, the odds of ever being in an extended grid down scenario and then going out and harvesting a deer and using that is almost, you might as well not even think about it as a strategy. But, like, around my neighborhood here, there are bunnies everywhere. Like, there's little cottontails. They're an invasive species that everywhere. I could probably walk out any morning. I could walk out and grab 5 of them. Like, they're everywhere. But if you don't know how to properly clean and cook it or to trap it, which we actually have some instructions in the book about how to trap small animals, like, you should know how to do that. And then with fishing too, know how to fish and then actually go out, fish, catch a fish, bring it home, clean it, cook it, and just kind of get a feel for how that process works. And once you do it once, you're good. Like, you clean one fish, you can clean like a million fish. Like, it's, you just have to do it once. It's a bit of a process. You got to get over that kind of like ick factor of putting your hands in the guts and ripping it out. But once you do it once, I mean, my kids have done it once, I think, each, and they're fine. Like, they're like, oh yeah, I can clean that, right? First time they did it, they're like, oh yeah, this is no problem. I know how to do this now. But when it comes to self-defense, that's a tricky one, because a lot of countries, I don't know what it's like in Ireland, but in Canada, our self-defense laws are really, they're really not very good. You can't use firearms for self-defense in almost any scenario. Even buying firearms is very difficult. And you can't use defense as reason to buy firearms. You have to either be a target shooter or hunting. But if you say you have a firearm for defense, unless you are trained and know how to use it, you're actually doing more harm than good. Your odds of having that go badly are far greater than if you had no firearm at all. And because people think that they can practice a little bit, buy a handgun or a rifle or whatever, and they'll be fine in a grid down scenario. I can defend my family. It's like, no, you can't. You really can't defend your family, because you've now, the second you have a firearm that now you don't know how to use, you've now escalated situation to where now whoever's breaking into your house is now almost being forced to meet your level of defense. Now it's now lethal, and if they're even slightly better than you, it's a no-brainer. I do think for everybody, some basic martial arts skills are very important for not only your fitness and health and stuff like that, but just for your confidence in the event of you had to interact with people in a post grid down world. Like, I'm blue belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu and a high green belt in kickboxing. And before I did martial arts, like, I always knew that if I ever encounter someone, that if there was a fight, I maybe could handle myself, but maybe not. Now I know that, okay, if someone's going to try to attack me, I have a whole whack of tools and I can defend myself. And that alone makes me more calm. And so in a grid down scenario, if I'm interacting with someone, I'm going to have a lot more of a calm demeanor, and I'm not going to be as aggressive. I'm not going to be nervous. I'm not going to be, like, you know, scared that everyone's going to attack me, because I know, okay, well, if something happens, Like I have all these tools to avoid being taken or being attacked. I could avoid a fight very easily. So for someone who's not trained, for someone who has no martial arts skills, has no training at all, they're always going to be, their cortisol levels will be high. They're going to be nervous. They're going to be like always thinking, oh, someone's going to attack me. And that alone is going to escalate the possibility of violent interaction. So like, if it comes to self-defense, just having some martial arts training is going to make you so much more calm, and it's going to avoid so many problems, not only in your daily life, but in a post-grid down scenario as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we were talking about then grid down scenarios, the longer it goes on, the more primitive stage we go back to, you know, and I think it's nearly, you know, you feel as though it's your duty to be looking after your family, or to have it's a responsibility to maybe even have an essential kit, whether it be the skill set that you've acquired by martial arts, let's say, or self-defense, or whether it be the actual physical kit, like a fishing rod, or like you said something about amateur radio and you know, your water device. Like, do you go through a list of essential survival kit that in the event, here's where your radio should be and here's where your water gallons should be, or what you should maybe have in stock in that event?
Well, I think number one is always going to be water. Water is huge because you can only last about 3 days without water. And having, so your rule of thumb is going to be a gallon of water per person per day. And then that includes your pets. So I got a chocolate lab. So that means 5 gallons of water per day is my, what I'm allotting. Now that also covers cooking, cleaning, brushing teeth, stuff like that as well. So it's not like the gallon of water is a good rule of thumb to have. But it's not, you're not necessarily going to use a whole gallon of water every day per person. But that's basically your rule of thumb for planning. So I have like a 55-gallon drum turned on its side in my garage where it's filled most of the way up with water. So I think that's about probably 45-ish gallons worth of water there. I have this in different areas around the house. I have other jerry cans of water. And I split them up and put them around the house because I live in an earthquake zone. So if there's an earthquake and there's a partial collapse of the house, which is unlikely because of wood frame construction, but if it were to happen, I don't want all my water to be in one spot where it gets destroyed. And then I also have the water bladder that I can put into my bathtub. But with the water, with wherever your water is, having a water filter in those locations as well, again, having multiples is also essential because if you have to gather water from anywhere else, you have to be able to filter it. And boiling it is probably okay enough, but you have to think about in an urban environment, chemicals and other things, you're going to be sediments, chemicals, things like that you don't want to be drinking. So you want to have a filter that's going to filter as much out as possible. There's tons of filters on the market. We describe a primitive filter you can build in the book, but water with filters is essential. Number one, absolutely must have. Second, I would actually put amateur radio, because if you want to really be prepared, you really want to be self-sufficient, you have to get off the communications grid. And every country's got a different way of becoming an amateur radio operator. In Canada, it's a 100-question test to get a basic license. And even if you just get the most basic amateur radio license and you get just a little handy-talky radio, you can communicate with repeater networks in your area. And all those repeaters that are around your area are all off-grid because ham radio operators were off-grid right away. Like, we're always thinking battery backups. So all the repeaters are going to be off-grid anyways. So when the grid goes down, those will still be up and you can still communicate. And as long as you are a licensed amateur radio operator, you get on these nets, you start talking, you can get a lot more information. You can find out what's going on. You can start hearing how governments are coordinating. And you can also help out a little bit as well. So the amount of information it's going to get you and the amount of help it's going to get you as well is well worth whatever the cost of the test is. And it's basically almost your number two priority if you want to be really self-sufficient. And then beyond that, just like try to have, like, I don't think like for most people having like a year's worth of food on hand is super practical. It's a lot of space. But you should have at least several weeks of food. And it's not that difficult. I do it home by just always having a bunch of food and rotating it out, just the stuff you eat on a daily basis, just having enough food in your house to last a couple of weeks, and then just making sure you're eating the old stuff first. And it's pretty easy to do, like keeping extra bags of rice, extra flour, things like that. It's very easy to do. And then, like, beyond that, having basic camping gear is going to be it's going to be good enough for if you had to leave, then you could at least, if you have camping gear, you can at least set up a camp somewhere. And if you can go to a campsite and camp, you can bug out with that same gear. It's just going to be not like a true bug out bag.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting you're talking about water filters. There's probably a great utility for water filters these days, even, I'd imagine, you know, like regardless of the scenarios, the doomsday scenarios. And I think Ireland is being brought up in European courts for its water quality issues at the moment. We're lucky enough here, we have a well, but on top of that, we have a UV treated and we have the reverse osmosis system put in. And it's not that we're over paranoid or anything like that, but there's a well there that needs to be cleaned. So, but, you know, I used to do a bit of personal training with people, and one of the people worked for Waterways Ireland, or sorry, Irish Water. And she told me, I'd never drink what comes out of tap in Ireland. And I think America is supposed to be worse than that. I don't know what Canada's like, but and there's nearly utility in everyone having water filters at the moment, even as it is.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Being able to filter your water is pretty essential. In Canada, water around here is pretty good. Other provinces are not as good. But in the States, I've drank some water out of taps in different areas of the United States. And the taste alone tells you that something's up with it.
Yeah, and you mentioned there as well about the kids going to school in a different, you know, world as the 80s when you yourself grow. Sometimes it often, I would have, you know, I suppose your background dictates kind of what you think would be essential for kids to learn these days rather than the different things that are coming into the curriculums. But the likes of your book, even, you know, you can imagine how much utility that would have for kids in a secondary school environment if they had, like I always thought, the physical education classes here in Ireland are once or maybe twice a week, and it's just go and hit a shuttlecock over the thing or play dodgeball. There's nothing about, there's no nutritional, there's no, you know, stretching, there's no anatomy, there's no heart rate stuff, and there's nothing that's actually essential to being healthy and what food does to your body. There's no theory in it at all. And it's shame because it seems it's such an essential thing to keep yourself fit and well. And obviously obesity is going through the roof, and I'm not saying just lack of exercise, but it's also our food chain. But knowing them, like even we're talking about going out hunting for meat, I can see the utility in that these days, just for the pure natural aspect of the meat you're getting, knowing where it comes from and that it's grazing on grass and it's not being pumped with anything. The same with chickens. So I go to a friend of mine up the Wicklow Mountains, and he has chickens there, and when I get an egg there, it's nothing like even the most organic free range things I can pick up in the shop. It's completely better. The shells are tougher. You know, the egg is yellower. You know, you can see the difference. But do you think, like, you could ever see a scenario where you could bring that book into even local schools to get a push on that? I think there's a massive, you know, even if you got a local politician running it, I think there'd be a massive utility in that.
Oh, there definitely would be. It's a tough place to get into. I know our education here is provincially mandated, and but I think from the parents' perspective, from people I've talked to, like, we're always, you know, at the school pickup, we're always complaining about the, you know, what the kids are learning is like, oh, you know, why don't they learn how to do their own taxes, right? Why are they learning how to do some abstract math problem when they could be learning something practical? Why, you know, why are they being forced to do music when they could be like out, you know, building something? Or like there's so many things that, yeah, like a book like No Grid Survival Projects would, you know, it would be definitely a big help. But I think at the end of the day, it also, like, the parents are the ones who do a lot of the education of that kind of stuff, whereas we just outsource the reading, writing, and arithmetic, whatever else, to the teachers.
Yeah, and there seems to be in the school a push towards the humanities and the college degree, where trades are falling off and there's massive supply You know, if there's a massive demand for tradesmen here in Ireland and you're waiting months before someone come out and do a simple plumber job in your house. You know, I have a friend who, you said you're a metal fabricator, a welder fabricator, a friend who is a metal fabricator, and his phone is forever hopping. You know, he could do his full week's work and he'd never come home on a Saturday or Sunday because people are just looking for him. You know, truck trailers need to be fixed. Like, and there's people, gates need to be put up, sheds for farmers, like everything is going. And it's a bit of a shame that we've gone that way because, yeah, like, you know, even for the job pool scenario, everyone's looking at your experience in college rather than your experience in real life or how practical you could be thinking outside the box, or it's all just academic. They don't want to see you or hear from you. They want to just see what's on the paper, what you are in terms of what number you've achieved. It's an awful shame. It's definitely a different world than what we grew up in. I think I was always going that way, but it's, you know, the lack of obvious focus on trade and pushing people towards that is baffling, you know. And maybe it is the agenda of not letting people be set too self-sufficient again. I don't know. You know, I seen you had a post up on, you know, about bunkers, let's say, you know, the Zuckerbergs and the Gates of the world, who definitely have questionable motivations, I would say, in most of their recent things. But, you know, in terms of a bunker, you know, how essential is something like that? You know, when you see, like, I suppose you kind of have to be somewhat aligned with politics and what's going on in politics to prepare yourself for what's going on in the world or what possible outcomes there could be. Like, what do you think when you see Zuckerberg building a bunker or Bill Gates building a bunker?
Well, I look at them because there's been more than a few billionaires and, like, Hollywood types and tech CEOs and stuff who have done that, and they built bunkers. Like, I wonder if it's, they see the possibility of, like, even an EMP or coronal mass ejection, they see the possibilities of collapses of governments, and then, or even economic collapse. And I'm wondering if they just want to hedge their bets, but, and then they have the money to do it too. So, like, I kind of, like, they have so much money. Like, it's one of those, maybe it's not really an agenda thing as much as it's like, why not have a bunker? You know, one billionaire's got a bunker. Next thing you know, all the billionaires get bunkers, right? And it's like one billionaire goes to space. Everyone wants to go to space, right? So, but I do, when it comes to a guy like Zuckerberg, I do kind of, that kind of makes me think a little bit, because they have access to all the algorithms. And I think the power behind having access to all the social media algorithms and being able to really get a good idea of what's going on worldwide through them, I do sometimes wonder about that and whether or not guys like Zuckerberg know a lot more about what's going on than even governments do, just because of the amount of data that they have access to, and they can kind of almost predict what's going to happen. And maybe he is kind of predicting something's going to happen, and he's hedging his bets with a very nice bunker.
Yeah, well, we've seen a few climate disasters, let's say, in a few years with wildfires. I think Canada had a few, didn't they, last year? And across Europe had a few. And then he's seeing something about, it turns out a lot of these were man-made, you know, and then you get these two kind of narratives that the climate change is being pushed. And I've been watching some of the US Congress where they said, look, you know, our emissions are only 0.04%, or sorry, carbon is only 0.04% of the atmosphere. So how could we ever have such a dangerous effect on it at all? But yes, they disregard that and they keep pushing and keep pushing. And then you see these kind of, like, it's nonstop raining in Ireland here since the start of the year. And I know Ireland's known for its rain, but I know local farmers who can't do anything in their fields, you know, at all with their crop. It rained all day today. And, you know, my example not too far away from yourselves, I suppose, was NASA in Alaska had this weather control project going on about 15 years ago, I think roughly around then. And born from that, during the Olympic Games in China, they were able to move the clouds out away from the stadium. Sometimes it worries me how much how much more control do they have than we think they have? You know, if they really want to push a climate catastrophe and they're moving clouds around the skies and people are swallowing it up because they're seeing wildfires and they're seeing excess rain and they're seeing rising water levels, how, you know, like, and these guys are then building bunkers, the same guys who are pushing these ideas, it makes you worried that, you know, maybe there's something way more sinister going on, and maybe the likes of these skills are way more in need than we think.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of whether or not the weather is being manipulated, I mean, I could definitely say without a doubt it's changing. Like, even where I live, the amount of the wildfire season is getting longer and more intense every year, basically. I think right now we have record low snowpack. Like, it just didn't snow. My wife likes to go snowshoeing, and she hasn't had a chance to go at all this year. Like, and we live with mountains basically half an hour away, like, and they're usually covered in snow, and they're not. So I've seen it happening over the past, well, 43 years I've been alive, that the climate has absolutely been changing. And I mean, whether or not it's like intentional is, I mean, we'll probably never really find out, but we definitely need to, the self-reliance thing helps with that, because if you can grow your own food and you can just having a backyard garden, you're going to kind of get a bit more of a feel for how the climate's changing, and you're going to be able to adapt quite easily to that, because you'll like physically be there, like in the dirt planting your seeds. And, you know, one year, oh, hey, growing season's gotten a little bit shorter, maybe got longer, or maybe this month was better, and you can adjust things. You get a kind of a better feel for how things are changing, and that'll help you to like adapt to it. If you start noticing that your growing season is shrinking, then you can plan for that. If you know your winter is getting longer, maybe you're going to start preparing for a longer winter, knowing that the power grid is going to get taxed. Maybe you start preparing for power grid going down the winter, because that happens on a regular basis too. When you start cranking up the heat and we're all in electric heat, then you could, if you're more in tune to everything, you can kind of prepare for that a little bit better. And yeah, I definitely think that we need to use climate change as the kind of a wake-up call to get prepared and get as self-reliant as we possibly can.
Yeah, I think, you know, have you seen, I guess in the last few years, I've seen this more prevalent, that there's people divided a little bit. And I'd say, kind of off the top of my head, I'm thinking that maybe there was three divisions or three groups that they separated into. There was the people who were kind of going along with everything that was being put through the TV and the radio. There's people who were worried about everything. And there's people who didn't know where they stood and just buried their head in the sand about it completely. Do you see a certain type of personality or certain traits in people who are more attracted to your projects and what you're doing here with the No Grid Survival Projects?
Well, I think it's definitely the people who are questioning what they see, like, and also people who are worried about stuff too. Like, if you're worried about natural disasters, you're going to be more gravitating towards a book like this. But if you're questioning the narratives that we get that are coming out, whether it be climate change or the grid or whatever, you're more likely to be gravitating more towards like a self-reliance thing. And it doesn't take much to find the book. Like, if you start, like, even if it was something like your water system, you wanted to, how do I get off the city water, and you start Googling about, you know, how to do that, or, you know, water, backup water, eventually you're probably going to find the book, or you're going to at least get down a path that's going to lead you there, right? Same thing with power. Like, how do I set up backup power? You're going to eventually probably find your way through the book as well. And it's those types of people who are like seeing the narratives are coming out, and they're questioning it. Those are the ones that are really gravitating towards buying No Grid Survival Projects. And then, of course, too, and then, like I said, people are scared of things happening. Like, if you're worried about an earthquake happening and you're looking to get prepared, it's definitely something that's without a doubt going to cross your path.
I've seen a comment on, I don't know, I know it's actually, it was Jordan Peterson and Dr. Phil released a podcast yesterday. I know Peterson is fellow Canadian. I don't know what your your stances on him, but I seen the two of them, and you put a video out yesterday about the attack on, it was an attack on families and faith, and there was something else. It was three. I can't think of it off the top of my head. And they both went through what they see kind of in the social sphere, that the nuclear family is kind of being attacked, and the Christian faith a bit has been a bit of, seems to be a bit attacked. And I seen a comment, and I think it was Rose at the top comment, and it said something like, lift weights, eat steaks, find God. And it had thousands of likes straight off the bat. I don't know what you think about that, the whole lift weights, eat steaks, find God.
Well, I think, like, definitely the lift weights, eat steak. Yeah, like, I think that's actually an underrated part of being self-reliant. It's just getting healthy. Like, there's so much benefit to lifting weights, you know, going for a run, training martial arts, and then eating. Like, the war against eating meat is kind of a weird thing I've noticed in the past little while, where they are trying to demonize it so much. But, like, that's the only reason we're here, is because our ancestors ate meat. Like, they went hunted down gazelles in the savannah, cooked it, and ate it, and their brains developed. That's the only reason why we're all here. So, like, the war against that is kind of baffling. And then, like, in terms of, like, finding God, I'm agnostic myself, so I don't really have an opinion. But having some kind of faith is, I don't ever see that as a negative for anyone. Like, it's like having something to believe in. I never saw that as negative. For, like, it's just, if it makes you a better person, then I say go for it. And I see that there is an online push now for a lot of people going back to the major religions, and I see it as a definite positive. And I mean, really, I think that's also like a little tiny silent rebellion against the political sphere, that, you know, there's been this push almost away from the churches, and people start going back. I mean, it's all these little subtle bits of rebellion that we're doing against the system, so to speak. And I think it's good to see. And I know a lot of, like, as I say, I'm agnostic. I know a lot of people who are religious, and are some people who weren't religious were now becoming religious. And I see there's nothing but a benefit.
Mm. You know, it's interesting, because the statement even of lifting weights and, you know, eating steak, and the podcast being about the attack on the family structure and faith. And it's interesting, we talk about the meat element of it, where obviously, you know, I know there's a carnivore diet out there, and I'm not fully on the carnivore diet, but I have been leaning more towards steak and eggs, even for breakfast, let's say, you know, and taking out the kind of refined carbs out of the diet. I'm feeling much more lighter. I do intermittent fasting as well, and I find breaking my fast with a bit of steak and eggs really fills me up and gives me a bit more energy to stay going in the day. I have three kids, and I never wanted, because I'm moving on to the nuclear family side of things now, I never wanted the climate or the times to dictate my family number, you know, how many. I'd like a big family. Don't want inflation to affect that, or any kind of anything to stand in that way. And I know it's maybe not the most practical way of thinking about it, but there's some things that are more deeply enshrined, I guess. You know, at the end of the day, when you're a grandfather, or, you know, when you want a big family there, and it's, I think it's a nice thing to have. Like, my father comes from a family of 10, and most people have one to two kids these days. It happened very quickly, and it's not a nice trend, I don't think. Like, they say where our population rate is no longer at the same, it was doubling in the 80s, and now it's not even at reproduction level. And yeah, it's scary, because I do see, I read a good bit about excess death and drop in fertility, and I'm wondering, is it do with food, is it do with, you know, there's a whole host of things controversial you could get into there. But I don't want the times to dictate the family size in terms of finding God. Like, I go to my kids' local school, and we grew up in Catholic Ireland, and we said our prayers going to school, and we did our communion and confirmation, and, you know, all the sacraments. My son goes to an Educate Together, and there seems to be, like, they can't say Christmas in there. you know, it's the total opposite. There's no cross anywhere on the wall where there's other religions to be more inclusive, and you can't talk about then things. It's like it's taboo, and it's a very quick turnaround. And it's a scary how quick the world changes. And I'm only 35, and I guess you've probably seen it more, you know, because you have, you know, it seems to be more rapidly changing. Do you think I'm just reacting to because I'm going through it, or do you think that's true, that it's polarizing a lot quicker?
I think it is. I think just going off of conversations with my kids, I think the polarization, and I think they use the word woke, but woke culture and stuff like that, and all of the political correctness and all of that, I think it's hitting a peak because, like, my kids are more along the lines of, like, they just, like, they're kind of tired of it. They're more making fun of it now, like, all the political correctness stuff. They're like, and they just kind of, they're like, they don't care what anyone does. They don't care. They just want everyone to kind of just leave them alone. They want to leave everyone else alone. And there's more of that around, even talking to their friends and stuff. Like, it seems to me that it got really divisive for quite a while, but now it's kind of like going back down the opposite direction where it's, I think they've seen with like cancel culture and stuff like that, like that's what can happen with it and when it goes too far. And I think it has gone too far and now it's being pulled back. And I think, I mean, my kids are, like my oldest is in high school. So there's still got a little ways to go before they start making changes in public policy. But I think within the next like 10, 20 years, it's going to go 180 degrees and we're going to get back to it. And I think even with like having bigger families and stuff like that, I think it's going to go the same direction. Like the kids are the generation coming up now, even though they're stuck on social media and screens and stuff, I think they're going to actually be a pretty positive influence of society once they start getting to the point where they start making policy decisions and start getting into governments and start changing and steering the ship back the right way, because ultimately it's their world. And I think they realize that and they are seeing where it could go. And even conversation I've had with like the kids who do my kickboxing class, like even them, they're into self-sufficiency and stuff. They want to learn stuff. They want to know how to do stuff. They want to know practical skills. Like they're interested in things like that. And I think that we got to wait a little bit and survive it a little bit longer, but I think we're going to see some big changes. And I think this generation coming up is going to be the one that makes those changes.
Yeah, I think that's great. Yeah, I think that's a positive note to even to finish on. Tell me just really quickly, if people were to go straight from this to download, not to download, but to find your book for purchase, what site would they go straight to?
It'll be nogridsurvivalprojects.com. There's a few sites out there, but I think that's the main ones, nogridsurvivalprojects.com. Yeah, you go there, you can buy the book straight from there. There's also a digital copy of the book as well that you can have right away. So you don't have to wait for the physical copy to get shipped to you. You'll have a PDF download. And there are some other like smaller eBooks that come with it as well. I can't remember off the top of my head what they were, but there's some... You get quite a bit of value for the $37 it costs.
Yeah, very good. Look, I really appreciate you taking time out. It was great talking to you. It's a really interesting subject. And I'm going to get a copy myself after speaking to you as well. So, I hope it continues to lift, because I think it's a great utility for people to have. I think it's a timeless piece. You know, you're always going to... like rainwater is not going to change, you know, and filters aren't going to change. And this scenario, you know, this book would have been useful 30 years ago and it's going to be useful in 30 years time.
Absolutely.
So I think it's great. And look, that's all. I appreciate you taking the time out.
Yeah, absolutely. It was fun. I liked it.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. And look, sure. Look, we might talk again in the future. And hopefully that book might worm its way a bit more into society by then.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I appreciate that, Michael. Thanks very much.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.